Good? Okay, there we go. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the session. My name is Lance Crandall. I'm a program manager over the MBAM product. Looks like we have a really good crowd here, so I'm excited. I'm really excited to share what we've been working on with MBAM 2.5, which is the new release of MBAM. We're really going to focus a lot today on how we can deploy this in complex environments. A lot of you have come to us, you've said that you have these complex environments, you want HA, you want disaster recovery, those sorts of things. So we're going to get a lot of detail about how to do that. So you're going to see a demo from start to finish of how that whole process works. And we've got a lot of other great things that we want to show you. I'm going to try and save some time for Q&A at the end. May or may not happen, but we'll try and save about 5 or 10 minutes for Q&A. I actually have a customer meeting right after this that I have to run to, so I won't be able to stick around for questions, but I will be at the Windows Management booth tonight if you want to swing by, and I'll also be at Ask the Experts tomorrow. So I definitely want to meet you, I want to answer your questions, but just be aware, unfortunately, I have another commitment right after this. So what we want to talk about today is we really want to show you guys all the new things we've done with MBAM 2.5. It's not just about deployment, we have a lot of other things, and we'll get into all of those benefits. And we want to show you how you can use these new benefits, the new features in MBAM 2.5, to drive better encryption compliance within your organization. And then we want to show you, as I mentioned before, how easy it is to deploy MBAM in a really complex environment, or at least as complex as I can get it with the VMs that I have. But really, we feel like this release that we've just come out with is something that really removes a lot of the roadblocks that customers have been telling us about when they've tried to deploy MBAM in the past. So what we're going to do today is we're going to take a walk down memory lane as to where we've been with MBAM. We're going to talk about the new features in MBAM 2.5. And then we're going to show you, as I mentioned, how you're going to deploy this thing and what the new experience looks like. We've got a big demo in the middle of that, so stay tuned for that. And then we're going to go into a new feature that we have that's called Enforce Policy. So we're going to go into a deeper dive about what that means and how it can improve compliance in your organization. So let's take that walk down memory lane. So we started out with MBAM 1.0. And what MBAM 1.0 was meant to do was to really add on some management capabilities and reporting capabilities that BitLocker out of the box didn't have. BitLocker was released with Windows Vista. You could manage it through group policy, but at the same time, it was missing some features that were really, really necessary to make it really useful in an organization or manageable in an enterprise organization. And so we made it so that it's a lot easier to provision, and we did that through, for example, if you had a PIN, we wanted your end users to be able to go in and set that after you'd provisioned it so they knew what the PIN was for their environment. So that was part of the provisioning piece that we did. We also knew that you needed to report on compliance in your organization. You needed to be able to tell if a machine was lost or stolen, what its status was. Was it encrypted? Did it meet your corporate standards? And so your compliance folks could say, yes, this is, we didn't have to worry about, you know, reporting this in the press or whatever. And so that was one of the things that we provided as well with MBAM 1.0. And the last thing was reducing costs. So we provided you with a help desk portal where users could call in, your help desk people could go to this portal and recover the keys. And through that, they got auditing as well, so you could see who was recovering keys and why. With MBAM 2.0 that was released last year, we really wanted to focus on improving compliance and security in your organization. And part of this meant that, for example, if you had like a TPM plus PIN protector that you had set on your own, but the policy said you only needed a TPM protector, we'd actually mark you as not compliant. So we made those policies a little bit more robust so that the calculations would show that you were actually compliant because you were more compliant, you had more protectors than what your organization required. We also wanted to make sure that you could integrate that with Configuration Manager. You had existing systems, they were deployed globally, and you wanted to be able to get that compliance reporting regularly through those existing systems that you already had. And so we added that functionality where you can now integrate MBAM with that Configuration Manager infrastructure and get compliance reporting through that. The last thing is that a lot of organizations, to cut costs, are moving more towards self-service, whether that's deploying applications or anything else. And so we created a self-service recovery portal that you can deploy in your organization, where if an end user gets locked out of their machine, goes into a BitLocker recovery event, then they can go to the self-service portal, get their own key without having to call the help desk, and that saves them time and you money. MBAM 2.0SP1 was released last December. And it covered localization. So generally the way that MDOPS worked in the past is that we'll release a major release, 6 months later we'll have a service pack. That service pack has localization in it. We also released support for the Blue Wave of products, which is all your R2 products for the 2012 suite of products that we have, System Center, Server, et cetera, as well as Windows 8.1. And then we also, as with any service pack, fixed a lot of bugs. So that's kind of where we've been. So what's kind of been happening in the competitive landscape over the past couple of years since MBAM and BitLocker have kind of become more prevalent? So the first thing you'll notice is that there's a lot of customers that are moving from their third-party encryption products to BitLocker. There's a lot of reasons for that. And some of it is due to cost. You know, you already have an enterprise agreement. You already own BitLocker. Why not deploy it? It's a great product. So they can lower their cost that way. It's built into the operating system. I don't have to keep deploying clients and different things like that. I remember working with a customer that had a competing product. Encryption product, and they had 26 versions of that product in their environment. Can you imagine managing 26 versions? That's crazy. And it was a headache for them. They were just afraid if they deployed over the top of that, the latest client, that it would break stuff, and it actually did a couple of times. So it's nice that it's built into the operating system, it's patched with the operating system, and it's a very stable product. We have a lot of third-party management solutions, or third parties that are moving more away from their own encryption products towards managing BitLocker instead. They can kind of see the writing on the wall. And many of your organizations have probably moved from a third party as well towards BitLocker. That's why you're here. So you can see some names up there of some of those third parties that have already made that move. Some of the other big names like Symantec and McAfee are most likely going to follow suit and start managing BitLocker as opposed to working on their own encryption solutions because it just makes sense. So why would you go with MBAM versus competition at this point? So we feel like with MBAM 2.5, we've had a lot of great features that can help you get there. There's also price points. You know, you get the entire MDOP suite at a very low price. So you get AtV, you get UEV, and the other products that are part of it. And that adds a lot of value on top of what you get. You know, we've added a lot of features, as you'll find out here, in MBAM 2.5 as well, that kind of make that story better as well. So let's go through kind of the feedback that we got from MBAM 2.0. So we got some feedback that, hey, 2.0 was a great release, but we have some concerns, and we'll go into more detail on these, but you know, we have localization, performance, policy enforcement, federal requirements, so that's things like FIPS, better AD integration, and enterprise deployment, so some of the topologies that come with enterprise. So some of you guys may not be aware, I have a short video to show, but some of you might not be aware of kind of how Microsoft gets feedback. And so I wanted to kind of show this on how we get this, because it's really important, if I can get the mouse to work here.
Products. An error box comes up like this one, for example. What the WSIP system does is it actually analyzes the stack sent back by that error dialog box. It uses that to identify the person, the actual programmer that wrote the piece of code that's caused the problem. We can now see that it's Mike Pulteney in the Active Directory's team. We can now decide on what way we want to express the frustration he's caused us. So we can choose one of the options here. I'm going to choose the jab. I'll just turn up the volume here because we can hear him as well. It's all part of the experience. And here we go. Oh, there you go. Yeah, he's still suffering from that right now.
Let's take a look at the technology behind this great breakthrough.
The first feature I'm going to talk to you about is called the micro stun. This is connected to a cranked up TENS machine. The electricity will generate through these arm sleeves. Micro impacts, okay. Four stages. The back of the chair releases back and thrusts forward into the person sitting into the chair. Yeah, very good. Micro jab. Two needles are released from the bottom of the chair into the fleshy part of the buttocks. Unorthodox in some ways, but it's very effective. It's more people related.
So the bottom line of what we're trying to say there is that really we do get your feedback. Sometimes it might not seem like we do as you know at Microsoft, but we take your feedback really seriously. And honestly, we felt your pain with some of these things that we brought up in the previous slide. And I want to let you know that we've made it way better. So that's what we're going to talk about right now. So we're going to go into what's new in MBAM 2.5. So the first thing is we're talking about improving compliance and enforcement across your organization. So as an organization, you obviously want to make sure that your machines are encrypted. That's kind of the whole point of this, right? You want to make sure they're secure and compliant. And there's some challenges there. One of the things that if you've deployed MBAM in the past, you remember there's the little dialogue that comes up if we need you to encrypt that device. And you have the opportunity to postpone it, right? So your users see that. And they postpone it and postpone it. And I remember I was on a call with actually a Microsoft employee, because we deploy MBAM and BitLocker in our organization, obviously. And I remember the dialogue came up during it, and I was like, sweet, I want to see what he did. And he clicked the postpone button, and he didn't even think about it. He just clicked postpone. I was like, dang it. So at the time, we were actually developing this new feature that we'll talk about in a minute, and I was like, there's something coming for you that's going to fix that problem. So anyway, we'll talk about that in a minute. And there's also a lack of pin complexity. So BitLocker supports an enhanced pin, which gives you all, you know, the entire character set of ASCII and Unicode characters, and MBAM did not support that. So MBAM supported letters and numbers, and that's it. So those are some of the challenges. People wanted to be able to have that full level of complexity that you can get with a pin. So what do we do in MBAM 2.5? So the first thing that we did is that we've allowed you to add a grace period to how long a user can keep postponing until encryption is enforced. And so you could say 3 days, you could say 5 days, you could say 0 days. And with 0 days, you're pretty much just saying, I don't want to give them the opportunity to even click postpone. I want it to immediately enforce encryption. And so after that grace period expires for whatever you've set it for, if they have not encrypted, then we'll enforce the policies immediately. And I'll talk about what that means. But the bottom line, what that means is that if they require a PIN or a password where we have to get some input from the user because they have to set that, then we now become the topmost window. You can't close it. And you can move it around a little bit just because we want to make sure that, you know, if they really were in the middle of something, that they aren't completely blocked from doing their work. But at the same time, it's the topmost, it's right in their face telling them that they need to set that information. Now, the cool thing is if you require TPM only, which doesn't require any user input, and that's usually generally for like your desktop machines or so forth, then we'll automatically begin encryption in the background. So the user won't even notice, it'll just encrypt in the background, and all those machines will get encrypted. It's great. So that's a really cool feature that we're really excited about. I've had a lot of customers start to implement that, and they've seen quite a big uptick in their compliance numbers. So the next thing is with pins, out of the box, we prevent simple pins. And so that means you don't have to configure anything. We're not going to allow you to do like pins like 1234 or 4321, any repeating characters. So it's pretty much you have two characters that can repeat, and after that, we'll block it. So that's so you get that out of the box. And we now added support for, or full support at least, for enhanced pins. So now you can use the entire ASCII character set, the Unicode set. ASCII gives you a little bit better pre-boot compatibility, but at the same time, you can use that full Unicode set if you want. So this is a really cool feature that a lot of people are really excited about. So we've also had a lot of customers that, especially in government or if you work with government, how many in you in here are government or work with government? There's quite a few. So in the past, BitLocker supported FIPS, which is a government encryption standard, and BitLocker would allow you to use what's called the DRA protector, and it's kind of certificate-based. MBAM did not support that in the past, so there was kind of some concerns there. And even with on the BitLocker side of things, there was kind of some issues with having a certificate, because now if you went into recovery, you'd have to ship that machine to someone that can actually unlock it physically. So that's kind of like really painful. You can imagine if you were somewhere and had to ship your machine back to get that unlocked. So this one's kind of a combination of MBAM 2.5 as well as Windows 8.1. But what we've done is we've added support for the DRA protectors in Windows 7 and Windows 8. And we worked with the BitLocker team in Windows 8.1 and worked with them to add a FIPS compliant recovery password. And so what that means in English is that now you can use MBAM, whether in FIPS mode or not, with Windows 8.1, and you can do the recovery through the self-service portal, through the normal help desk portal, and so the recovery experience is a lot better than it was with the DRA protector. So that's available in Windows 8.1. Localization support. So there's a lot of international companies. Most of you probably work, or a lot of you might work with other languages. And as I mentioned, localization comes 6 months later generally. So what we did this time is that we're SIM shipping with 11 languages. So now you get this out of the box. You don't have to wait 6 months for a service pack before you can deploy it to your organization. And then performance. So that was some more feedback that we got. So we actually made really huge strides between 1.0 and 2.0. How many of you deployed MBAM 1.0? Actually, quite a few. So if you guys looked at the scalability white paper that's out there for 1.0, and you had 100,000 machines, it was kind of ridiculous. It was like we said you needed 5 machines, you had to have 48 gigs of RAM or something ridiculous. And so it was insane. So with MBAM 2.0, we improved that a lot, but people wanted even more. So what we did is that We've really worked on the performance on the database side of things and also with our web components. And so we can now support up to 500,000 clients on really minimal hardware. So we went from 48 gigs of RAM to way, way less. And I'll show you what that is in a little bit. But that's really huge performance improvements there. Along with the performance improvements that we did, we made it so that with the enterprise compliance report in the past, it was about 12 hours off because we had the SQL job that had to run, create this view, and it was just kind of a pain. So, you know, customers don't want to like go in and see something that's 12 hours old. They want to see what's fresh. So with those improvements we made, we actually made it so that all those reports are real time now. So as clients report in, now that report is exactly the way that you'd expect it to be and have the accurate data. So AD integration. So if you deployed a previous version of MBAM, you'll know that all of the role-based administration that we had was local groups on the box. And so, you know, you'd have to embed groups and things like that. All the app pools and all the accounts that we had were like network servers or machine-based, so it was kind of messy to manage. So now we use AD groups and AD accounts for everything. So with the AD groups, we can do all the administrative roles. And so that's all your reporting, your help desk users, and set that all up all in AD. So you don't have to go now embed that in like a local group and have to manage local groups as well as domain groups. We also got rid of the system admin role. So it was just kind of like an oversight, not an oversight, but we didn't really need to have like an extra role. So it was just kind of more overhead for you. To try and think about who do you want to be, a system admin or whatever. So now, if you want someone to have that kind of similar role, all you have to do now is just put them in both of the groups. So we'll have the help desk group and the advanced help desk group and a reporting group. So you just put them in the advanced help desk group and the reporting users group, and you can kind of have some granularity there with how you want people to have rights to the system. And then we're using AD accounts and groups across the board. So for your app pools and all those sorts of things, it's not the network service account anymore. It's all just an AD account and service account. And this one's really a big one. This one we really spent a lot of time on because we kept getting feedback about, I can't deploy this in a cluster. How do I load balance and those sorts of things? Anyone in here asked that question in the past? A few of you, okay. I expected more hands on that one, but that's okay. So this one is, you know, we wanted to have high availability. We wanted to have that disaster recovery with SQL, with load balancing, et cetera. There's also some challenges with deploying this in a multi-forest type environment. So our FQDN support wasn't great in previous versions. So if you had multi-forest, you essentially had to have two different MBAM environments set up, and that's kind of a pain, a lot of overhead and so forth. There's a lack of deployment agility. What that means is that if you wanted to add the self-service portal later, you'd have to uninstall the entire product and reinstall it. That's not very, very cool when you're in an environment. You want to be able to just kind of do it as a components. So with MBAM 2.5, what we've done is we've added support for load balancing, so you kind of get that out of the box. Now, granted, you have to have your own load balancing environment set up, right, but we'll hook into that very easily. We support highly available SQL configuration, so and all the DR with that. So we'll support mirroring, we'll support clustering, and we'll support the new availability groups that are new to SQL 2012. And then we've also made it so that you can support multi-forest and FQDNs. Or we have better FQDN support. So you can have one environment as long as your trusts are set up correctly, and that's kind of the key piece there. If your trusts are set up correctly between forests, then you can have one environment that supports your entire organization. And we really spent a lot of time trying to make this all happen by completely redoing the server experience. So it's all of the SQL, or all of the configuration and installation, it's all completely different now. So we added PowerShell support, which wasn't there before, to be able to install it on multiple machines very easily. And we also have a UI that makes it as simple as well. And that's all completely done from the ground up. All right, so now we're going to talk about the deployments. And that's such a big piece of what we've done. And just kind of walking through the architecture, some of you have probably seen this before. This isn't really a topology. It's more just like logical components. So don't think of it like I have to have four servers. This is just each component. So the first one is that we have a couple of database components, and I'll just walk through these very quickly. But the first one is a recovery database that stores all your keys as your clients report in, it'll escrow the keys. The compliance and audit database has all of your compliance information. So as clients continue to report in, they'll have all of the, stating whether or not they're encrypted or not. And then we have all the reports that can show you all the compliance of your organization. Self-service portal where your end users can go to do their own recovery without having to call your help desk. And we also have the admin and monitoring server, which allows your help desk to call in, or people to call into your help desk and do the recovery there. On the CM side, it's kind of similar. The difference is that all of your compliance data is now flowing through CM. So that's what you get. So the recovery piece is still a separate database. You can install it on the same server if you want, but it's a separate component still. But all the compliance data, all the reports, that all comes through Configuration Manager. So you can use that infrastructure, have it be your single pane of glass, and so forth. All right. So a lot of people ask about sizing, and they want to say, I have 10,000 clients. What do I need? Well, NBAM, like I mentioned, we've totally made it like perform way better. And so you can see the specs here for 500,000 clients aren't that big, right? So we didn't really feel that there was a need to like break it down into like 10,000 machine chunks or anything, because like these aren't that great, you know, these aren't that high of specs. So if you can see here, we have, you know, for the web components, it's about, you know, pretty standard run-of-the-mill processor, and then for RAM, you know, it's about 4 to 8 gigs. For the SQL Server, it's about 8 to 12 gigs, but that's not that big of a machine nowadays. So you can spin that up on a VM and be up and running very quickly. So for server, we've added a couple of new prerequisites, and we moved to .NET 4.5, we moved to ASP.NET MVC 4, and that's for the self-service portal. As I mentioned, we have some really robust PowerShell support now, and so we require PowerShell 3. And this next bullet's kind of important. So if you're going to move to load balancing or install it with load balancing, or you have a custom host name, meaning like my server name is LANT01, and I want to call it BitLocker Recovery, then you need to create an A record. And this just kind of makes it simplifies the process for you. And then you'll want to set up constrained delegation as well. So constrained delegation is just part of Kerberos, and we'll get into what that means in just a minute. But those are kind of some new requirements that are needed, and those are mainly only if you have a custom host name. So if you're just using like one server, one web server, and you just call it by what you've actually named the server in Active Directory, then you're totally fine. For the client, there's no new prereqs, but there is a new client, so you will need to deploy that as well to take advantage of all the new features. So one of the things, I look through all the forums, the TechNet forums, and try and answer questions when I can. One of the things that comes up a lot is people will get access denied on their client, wonder why their client's not reporting in, and things like that. And that all has to do with this SPN thing. And so how many of you are familiar with an SPN? Wow, a lot of people. Okay. So SPNs are kind of confusing, but really what it is, in a nutshell, is that it's required for Kerberos authentication. So this is how the client is able to authenticate to the web services. That's the bottom line. So the question is, well, why do I even have to care? I don't even want to think about it. Why can't NBAM just do this for me? We can, but it requires during installation and configuration, but it depends on if you have rights in Active Directory. And a lot of users won't, because it generally requires domain admin rights. You can do some delegation and so forth, so it doesn't require that. But at the same time, that's generally how it is. So some of you may be domain admin, some of you may not. So this is something that you'd have to be concerned about. So if you don't have admin rights, you'll actually get a warning at the end. You can still complete the installation, but at the same time, you really won't be up and running, because you still need to create that SPN for that authentication piece to happen. So if you want to set it up manually, there's the command at the bottom there that you can use, and it's just this set SPN command. So you would just send this to your AD domain admin and say, hey, can you run this for me? That'll create this SPN for you. So the one difference here between how it was in NBAM 2.0 is that it created it on the in NBAM 2.0, it created on the SPN on the machine account, and now it creates it on the app pool account. So you can see at the bottom, there's an example there. So as I mentioned, you know, load balancing wasn't technically supported. You could get it to run, and it works just fine, but it was a lot of manual steps, and again, it wasn't fully supported. So now with it in NBAM 2.5, if you wanted to migrate, there's some things you need to be aware of. And so the first thing is, load balancing requires those SPNs on the app pool credentials. And so, you know, let's just pretend you created a service account called, you know, NBAM service account or something like that. So that's what the SPN has to be created on. If you already had a custom host name, like you called it BitLocker Recovery, and now you want that same BitLocker Recovery custom host name to be associated with your new load balancer, then there's what you'd have to do is you'd actually have to run this setspn-d command, which will remove the old SPN, and then you'd have to run the installer, and it would create the new SPN for you on the app pool credentials. That is only if you've already used that custom hostname, and you're planning to use the same one for your load balancing, like virtual network IP address. So if you haven't done that, then it's not that big of a deal. So if you had one server in the past and you didn't have a custom host name, you just called it LANT01, and that's what your server was called, then it's very simple. You don't have to do anything but just run the NBAM installer, and it will create the new SPN for you with your custom host name that you're using for your front end to your load balanced environment, and you're good to go. Now, the one piece here at the end is you have to set up constrained delegation still, since you're using that custom host name. So that's a manual step that you have to do. You have to go to Active Directory. I'll show this as we get into it a little bit more. All right, so there's a bunch of accounts that you need to go through and think about and create as you prepare to do your installation. And I'm not going to read through each one of these, but there's a couple of them that have to be the same. And just an example of that, I have more notes in the appendix of my deck if you want to take a look at that, so it can kind of tell you which ones need to be the same. But for example, like the web service application pool credential needs to be the same as the database access account, because your app pool is what contacts the databases, and so that needs to have that read-write access so that it can update data. So with the old experience of deploying NBAM, it was kind of all or nothing, like I mentioned. If you wanted to add the self-service portal, for example, at a later time on that same server, you now had to uninstall the entire product from that server and reinstall it. So that's kind of a pain when you just want to add one component or remove one component. If you were reinstalling or you're trying to upgrade CM objects, we'd actually block that with NBAM 2.0. You had to go manually delete all those objects. The problem is when you delete those objects, now you've lost all your compliance data. So that was kind of a crappy experience. As you went through, and if you wanted to pick a certificate, which we highly recommend to secure your data, it was really challenging to know which certificate it was just because of how it was presented in the UI. So we've done some things there to make that better. And there was no PowerShell. So you couldn't go through and install it on multiple servers using just by editing the PowerShell script. So you had to go through the UI every time. And the last thing is there was a lot of screens in this server installer. And some of those screens, depending on what path you took, might have only had like one control. So it's kind of frustrating to be going through so many steps and when it could have been condensed. So a new experience is that we've separated installation from configuration. What that means is you're first going to install the bits on the server. That doesn't mean that NBAM is installed, it just means that the bits are there. And then you're going to walk through a configuration process where you say, I want this to be my web server, and here's how I want it configured. We now support remote SQL installation, so that's a big one for people that want to install into clusters where they don't want to install or can't install bits on an actual server. They just want to install the databases, and that's it. We set you up to be load balancing ready. So as I mentioned, we're not going to set up load balancing for you. That's, you might have like an F5 and load balancer or something like that. But we do make it very easy during the installation that you just point it at your custom host name and you're good to go. We'll set up everything else to work. Got a lot of PowerShell, as we mentioned, to help make that a better process. We do an in-place upgrade of CM objects, so if you're already in 2.0 and you want to upgrade to NBAM 2.5, then you don't have to go delete all those objects, lose all your compliance data. It's a simple upgrade. We upgrade in place. We've improved logging, improved our prereq checking to just try and make it so that the first time you go through the experience, you have all the information you need, and if something goes wrong or you don't have all the prereqs, it's logged very well, and you can get a lot of feedback on that. The last thing we did is that we separated out the ADMX policy templates that are required to set up NBAM, and we put those on Microsoft.com/downloads. And this isn't just for NBAM. We've actually done this with all of the MDOT products. So if you go out there, there's one download file that you can find to search for MDOT ADMX templates, and it'll have all the AppV templates as well as the UEV templates as well. So you can just point your AD admin at that, and he can go download them and help you create the GPOs. So as I mentioned, kind of the flow of the experience, you lay down the bits, and then after the bits are down, you can use either a UI to do the configuration, or if you want, you can go straight to PowerShell at that point and use PowerShell. But using that bootstrapper is what actually gets the PowerShell commands down on the machine as well. So that's kind of important. And you can see there at the bottom, there's the four commandlets that we have to be able to do the configuration of NBAM. All right. So now for the fun. So now we've got a demo where I really want to go through a complex setup here. If I can get logged back in. So as this logs me in, hopefully here, the environment that I've set up is I have two load balancers. So I have two web boxes that are set up in a load balance configuration. I have a domain controller, and then I have two SQL boxes. So with the SQL boxes, what we're going to do is we're going to use the new SQL 2012 always-on availability groups. Hopefully, this logs me in. And so we'll set that up. And that helps if I put the right password in. Hey, that's better. Great. So with the SQL boxes, we'll set up the always-on availability groups. So that's going to give me HA and disaster recovery if I set it up right. So as I mentioned, I've already gone through and set up load balancing itself, but I haven't set up MBAM into that web farm. So the first thing here is that I've created this virtual network name called Lance NLB, and it's just an A record. It just points at my virtual IP address. So now if someone hits Lance NLB, it's hitting my load balancer. It's going to split off traffic as appropriate to the appropriate web server. So I just wanted to demonstrate that we've already set that up. I've also created an app pool account here that I'm going to use for my application pool called MBAMRW, and RW is just standing for read-write to make it easy for me to remember. So the other thing that we want to do here is we're going to set up delegation. But first, before I set up delegation, what I want to do is manually create the SPN. So we just kind of talked about SPNs. So the dash S just means that it's not going to allow me to do a duplicate. So the HTTP forward slash, that's just the actual SPN part. And then I'm setting that up on my service account that I'm going to be using for the application pool. So that's it for that. And then I'm going to set up constrained delegation. So again, I just went to the properties of the account. And I'm going to say, trust this user for delegation just for this service. And the service is what I just created. So I'm going to browse for that account. And now you can see here that I actually have a couple of SPNs that have already been created, but I want to use the one that's associated with my load balancer. So I'm now constraining delegation to only work with the one that I just created. And that's pretty much all we need to do on the domain controller at this point. So now we're going to jump over to the SQL box. All right, so whenever people think about securing MBAM, they generally think about from client to server, as opposed to from the server to the SQL boxes too. So what we want to do is we want to make sure that reporting services are set up to be secure, as well as all encryption or all connections and communication that are coming from the web services for MBAM are also secured to the SQL box. So first we're going to do reporting services. So I've just opened Reporting Services Configuration Manager. And I already have a cert on this box, so I'm just going to select that cert and apply it. All right, and we'll double check and make sure that the report manager URL is set up. So that's already set up for the report manager URL as well using SSL. If not, we could just click advanced and do that there as well. So now anytime I'm accessing reporting services, then it's going to be secure over HTTPS as well. All right, and then I'm going to jump into SQL Configuration Manager. And there's a couple of things I want to do here. The first thing I'm going to do doesn't have anything to do with security, but by default, the availability groups aren't turned on. So if you right-click the service and then go to Always On High Availability, you'll see that there is this checkbox there. So you just have to check that. All right. Now to make all the communication that's coming to the server secure, I just go to SQL Server Network Configuration, Protocols for MS SQL Server, and then there's this Force Encryption option. I'm just going to say yes. And then I go to the Certificate tab, and I just select my certificate. We'll restart the SQL service so that takes effect. And while that's happening, again, that's all communications that are coming from really anything, it doesn't have to be the MBAM web services, to this SQL box is now going to be encrypted. So that's kind of the first step there. All right, so this is the new bootstrapper process. This is very straightforward. We'll get into configuration in just a minute. So it's pretty much just a next operation. So we're just going to accept license terms. We're going to not use Microsoft Update, although you can. We're not going to join the CEIP program. And then we'll do install. So while this installs, again, this is the bootstrapper. So all it's doing right now is it's laying bits on the server. It doesn't know if this is going to be a web server. It doesn't know if it's going to be my SQL box. That's what we're going to configure in just a minute. So it's just bits on a server right at this point. And again, this is what we talked about with deployment agility. So now I'll have bits, but then I can do configuration separately for each component. So I can install or uninstall component on a component level basis. The other thing that that does is it lays down the PowerShell again. So you could launch PowerShell at this point and run any PowerShell commandlets that you wanted that were related to the MBAM. So here at the end, you'll see that it says launch the wizard. So this launches the UI, which is what we'll do for this demo. And here's where I can add and remove features. So we're going to add, and since we're doing the database server, we're going to click both databases. And we're also going to add the report since we have SSRS on this server. It's going to do a prereq check, but since we're doing the databases, at this point it doesn't know if I'm going to install those databases on this local server or if I'm going to do it remotely. So it's not actually checking to see if SQL's installed because it just doesn't know where I want to install it yet. All right, so here's the configuration screen. So what I want to call out here is that there's a couple of checkboxes on the first screen, and each component that you select on that screen is going to have its own configuration screen. So it's a streamlined UI that we've created that's a lot easier to follow, and you know what you're configuring on each screen. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to install the database or choose my database server. And so, again, this could be remote. I could have just picked a remote server. It doesn't matter. I could pick my cluster virtual network name. It doesn't matter. So this one is the read-write access account. This is the one that needs to be the same account as what you use for your app pool credentials. So if you remember on my domain controller, I had MBAMRW because it helps me remember that it's read-write. And so I need to use that same account here. This one is the read account. And this one's used for reporting only. So I created that one with an R at the end just to let me know that it's read-only. So we're going to pick the same server since we're installing it on this one. I could choose a different instance here if I had it on a different instance, a named instance. I can change the database names. If you are upgrading, please be aware that the name here needs to be the same as what you had before for your database, and that way we can upgrade the schema. So don't change the name if you're doing an upgrade. Keep the name the same as whatever you had it before. And this is the second database, so I'm just going to use the same read-write account because that's what my app pool is going to hit is both of those. All right. So at that point, when I click Next, it knows where I want to install SQL, so it's going to reach out to whatever server I put there and do the validation to make sure that it meets the requirements. All right, so now we're going to do a reporting. And with reporting, this first one is the reporting users group. So this is an AD group you can see that I have here, and I created it. You can add users to that to manage, you know, the roles of who can view the reports and who can't. You'll see here, since I'm installing it on the same machine, it already knows I wanted to point it at this compliance and not a database connection. If I put the report somewhere else, then I'd have to point back to the appropriate server. Now, this account right here, the compliance and audits domain account, this is the read-only account that we did because the reports only need read-only to the database. Oops, I'm sorry. That one actually is read-write as well because it has to do the auditing. No, I lied again. It actually is read. I'll get it right. All right. So this is the one that just have read access to the reports. So it's going to do some validation to make sure that I have SSRS installed and everything's appropriate there. One of the things I didn't show is that if you need help with these screens, you can hover over the title here, and it will give you a tooltip that'll show you what to do, or you can go down to get help with this screen, and that'll take you out to a TechNet page that's relevant to the page that you're on. So if you can't remember, is this the read account like I did, I could click that, and it would provide me with some information. All right, so we passed all the prereqs, and here's our summary screen. So, you know, if you're doing this in your organization, you could take a screenshot of this or copy and paste it so you know how you configured it for future reference. You can also export it to PowerShell, so this is really convenient. So I could save this script that has been created for me this entire time and then run that on another server if I wanted to. And we'll show how that works in a little bit, but that's where you do that. All right, so now we're going to install the databases, and while that's happening, I'll pull up SQL Management Studio. The reason I'm pulling up SQL Management Studio is so that we can set up our availability group once the databases get created. So as you can see, that was just kind of a streamlined experience. So I selected two features. I could tell what features I was going to install. It's a lot different than the other the previous NBAM 2.0 server experience. All right, so everything's successfully installed, which is great. Off to a good start here. So now what we're going to do is install our availability groups. So I already know that availability groups require me to do a full backup of the databases. This will be fast since there's nothing in them. So I'm just going to go ahead and do that first. All right, and now we're going to create our availability group. So it has a nice wizard here that we can walk through. We'll just name this NBAM AG. We're going to select the databases that we want to be part of that availability group, which are both of our NBAM databases. And then we're going to add a replica. And this is the other server that we want it to be part of this availability group. So we'll just connect to that. We'll select that we want automatic failover. Then we want to create a listener. So the listener is just the kind of the front end. It's kind of like in load balancing. This is our virtual network name. So we're going to call that NBAM AG. We'll have that listen on port 1444. You can put whatever port is appropriate. I have a static IP. Oh, boy. If I can get that. So that might be challenging since it's not showing me the add button there. So we'll see if we can get DHCP to let us work here. All right, then we're going to pick a share that I created in advance for the initial synchronization that happens between the databases. Looks like we're good there. Click Finish. And we'll create our availability group. So what this is doing is it creates the availability group, it creates the listener, that's needed, and I'm not going to go into a lot of detail on what an availability group really is or how that all works, but again, just think of it as like your cluster or mirror, right? It's just the front end into that environment, and then it's going to do the create the databases on the other server and complete the availability group wizard. So we're done. So now we've created HA and a DR type environment using availability groups. That was pretty easy, right? So far, except I couldn't see the button to add the static IP, but that's okay. And that's it for SQL. So now let's do the web components. So again, I've already set up these two web servers to be in a load balanced environment, but we need to add NBAM into that. All right, so we're just going to do add new features again, and this time I'm going to add the two web portals. Now you can see here also that I could select System Center Configuration Manager Integration. That's where you can select that. Before it was like a path you had to choose where you can kind of go right or left. With this one, you can add it anytime as appropriate in your environment. So we're going to make sure we got all the appropriate web components here. I've already installed those in advance. So we installed ASP.NET and PowerShell, as well as all the IIS components. Those are all available on TechNet. All right, so now we're going to start configuring our web components. So if you remember before, in the NBAM 2.0 and 1.0 installers, if you wanted to do a certificate, it just had this giant thumbprint that you had to kind of know which, you know, which certificate that went with. And so that was kind of not a great experience. So if you can see here, now I can tell really easily based on the friendly name of that certificate which one I want to choose here. So I have a couple here just for demonstration purposes. I could click that to view like what the actual details of that certificate were, but it's a lot better environment to be, or a lot more user-friendly to be able to choose that. So as I select that, that was the one that's associated with my my load balanced virtual network name. So you can see it changed the host name since that's the host name that was on the certificate associated with that, the common name. So here I can select different ports, different where I want to install it. And this is the important part too, is that if you remember, we set up the database access account, the one that has read-write access. This is our app pool credential. And so this is going to set up this account on the app pool, and then it's going to be able to access the database with read-write permissions. So that's, it's important that this one's the same as whatever you set up on the when you're setting up the databases. Now with this one, the difference here as well is that instead of installing this part or selecting the database that was you know, the specific NBAM SQL 1 that we had, we actually have that availability group now. So again, this could be your cluster name, right, if you were doing a cluster as opposed to an availability group. So I'm just going to select that here, and remember we named it NBAM AG. That was the listener. So unless selecting DHCP messed something up for me here, hopefully this will work. Select NBAM AG again. Here's where we set up the roles that we want, or the AD groups that we want to have associated with the roles. So here's the advanced help desk one. I've created these groups, these AD groups in advance. Here's one I want for my normal help desk folks. And then I'm going to specify who my reporting users are, which group they're a part of. And remember, this part is the same as what we set when we set up the reports as well. You can see here there's a checkbox for Use System Center Configuration Manager Integration. And that piece is really associated with limiting the reports that they see. So we still have audit reports that are outside of compliance reports. And that's what this does, is it'll hide those other reports that aren't relevant. With HTTP, with SQL Server Reporting Services here, we set up HTTP. I can't remember what server it is. So we'll put report server at the end. And then we've got our two virtual directories. So you can change the virtual directory if you want. It's up to you. So this is doing the validation there to make sure that SQL Reporting Services is accurate, and doing the rest of the validation on the groups and so forth. So while this is happening, luckily that finished. So we can see everything that we did here. I can also export the PowerShell, which I've done, because I have another web server that I want to put as part of my web farm here. And so instead of having to go walk through that wizard again, I can just change a couple of things and be good to go. So while this is installing, I'm actually going to jump over to the other server, the other web server. And I've created some PowerShell here. This is just what I exported. The only thing I needed to really change here between the two servers was the certificate, because obviously this is going to have a different certificate. And so with that, I could just, the way that you can get that thumbprint that you need there is just say get child item cert and then local machine my, and that'll show you everything in your local machine cache. So here I can say, hey, there's the certificate, there's the thumbprint that I need, so I can replace that if I need to. So let's run this one. Oops. So since we had to put credentials in there, if you remember, it's going to prompt me for them. I could hard code them in there if I didn't want to be prompted and just wanted to run silently. But for the sake of this demo, I'm not doing that. So I'll go through in a second, and it'll start checking all the prereqs. And hopefully, if all goes well, then it'll install. So let's jump back and see if this is done. So it looks like we successfully added our admin and monitoring server. It's in a load balance scenario now, so now I should be able to, once that other one finishes, I should be able to go to the Lance NLB and be able to pull that up so it's hitting my either box depending on the load that it determines. Make sure this one gets done. So there's three different web components. That's why I'm getting prompted for my credentials three times. Again, you could totally just put your credentials in there so you don't have to be prompted, but we didn't do that. Last one here. All right, I'm successful. So you can see how easy that would be if you had a web farm and you want to get this installed. Just edit the PowerShell and go execute it on those machines, and you're good to go. So that's being a smart admin there. All right, and that's it as far as that demo. So that was a pretty complex environment, at least as complex as I can get it for five VMs. But we showed how you can do an availability group to have that SQL disaster recovery and high availability. Showed how you can set up load balancing very easily. So we got the entire complicated MBAM environment set up in about 20, 25 minutes. So that's not too bad. All right, let's jump back over to a couple of slides here. All right, so let's walk through the upgrade process. So the upgrade process is fairly straightforward. You go from, on the server side, if you were on 1.0 right now and you wanted to get to 2.5, the bridge for any of the upgrades is going to be 2.0.sp1. Now, this is on the server side, so don't think you have to deploy the client to, you know, all of your machines two or three times to get here. And really, this only impacts the databases. So you need to be able to run, you do an uninstall of 1.0, you'll do an install of 2.0.sp1, which upgrades the schema, but you don't have to install all the web components every time. It's just the database side that you're really concerned about. And so those are the paths to get to MBAM 2.5. And so 2.0.sp1 is your bridge. And as I mentioned, the client can go from any version. So if you're on 1.0, you just deploy the 2.5 agent to all of your clients when you're done. And again, you always want to install the server side first because that can impact your client. So just make sure your servers are upgraded, then you can go to the clients. There's no reboot. It'll just uninstall the old one in the background and reinstall, and you'll be up and running. So the upgrade steps are, first, you want to uninstall the web components. And the reason for that is because you don't want clients reporting data or trying to escrow keys to your database. You want to back up that database because we want to make sure that nothing goes wrong, and we can always back out of that. And then you'll uninstall the other components that there may be. And as you uninstall the bits that you have on the database server, the databases are going to remain. So you don't need to worry about your databases getting removed or losing any of the keys or compliance data when you do this. At that point, you're going to install the new version. So you'll start with the databases, and then you'll install the web components, kind of like I demonstrated a minute ago. And then you'll deploy the new MBAM agent. On CM, it's pretty much the same process. Uninstall web components, back up your databases, uninstall all the other components. But note that as you do this, the CM objects and your databases are going to remain. Because, again, if we remove your CM objects, then it's going to remove all your compliance data, and you kind of have to start over, which isn't a great experience. At this point, you'd upgrade the MOF files as well, install the new version, check the group policies, because there are a couple new group policies that are related to the enforced policy feature especially. And then you'll deploy the updated agent. So that's kind of the process there as well. So let's jump into enforced policy, because this is a really cool feature that we're excited about. So if you remember from what I mentioned at the beginning, kind of one of the frustrations that security admins had is that users could postpone indefinitely, right? Some, you know, they wanted to be able to give their users the ability to postpone temporarily, but not for, like, ever. So that's kind of what the point of this was, is how can we prevent it? How can we get people compliant sooner rather than later? And so I'll show you in a minute in a demo how you can set this in group policy and then where that grace period is. So you can set a different grace period for fixed drives versus your operating system drive. Just depends on how you want to set it up. So if you deploy the MBAM 2.5 agent today, and then you decide 2 weeks from now that you want to turn on this enforce policy feature, you need to be careful because the minute you deploy the enforce policy feature, or the 2.5 client, it actually calculates whether you're compliant or not and sets that as your start date for non-compliance. So if you say, hey, I want to have a two-day grace period, and you've done this 2 weeks from now, then all of your machines are already past their due date because they've been postponing it for 2 weeks. So they've kind of already had their grace period. And so that's something you just need to be aware of. So you can turn it on at the same time, but if you do turn it on later, realize that a lot of your machines, if you deployed the 2.5 agent that were non-compliant, might be past that enforcement date already, and the users wouldn't have the ability to postpone at all. Once they do become compliant, then we clear that value on there, so it's not like it's an ongoing value. We push that data up to the non-compliance date up to the MBAM databases, but we don't expose it in the report. So if you wanted to create your own custom report of like, hey, show me everyone that's been non-compliant for the past 30 days or something, you could do that to kind of see that where you stand in your organization. And that can help you see just, again, how long machines have been non-compliant. The important point here is that, on that last bullet there, is that fixed data drives don't attempt to encrypt until after your operating system drive is encrypted. So we want to make sure that we can, like if you use Auto Unlock, for example, on the fixed data drives, so they don't have to type their password in every time when they access that drive, then that needs to get stored in the registry, and we want to make sure that that's secure, right? So we have to make sure that the operating system drives encrypted before that happens. So I kind of already mentioned this at the beginning, but I wanted to make sure you understand. So if it's TPM only, there's no user interaction that's required. And usually organizations do this for their desktop machines so that because they're not as mobile, right? I'm not going to put a desktop on my shoulder and walk out of the building with it generally. So that's why people will do that. So after that grace period expires, there's no UI. Encryption begins automatically in the background, and you can get your desktop fleet encrypted as soon, you know, very quickly, which is great. And it doesn't bug the users, right? So if I wanted to just say, hey, I want all my desktops encrypted by tomorrow type of a thing, then I could set the grace period to zero today, and it would automatically encrypt them all. That's pretty cool. So users don't have to get bugged at all. TPM plus PIN, or having a password, those are generally for those kind of older machines that you may have in your environment that aren't Windows 8 certified. There's a great white paper that our marketing team released recently about kind of helping you understand why pre-boot's even needed and where that's going in the future. So if you have Windows 8 certified hardware and you're on Windows 8, then you don't have FireWire ports, and this is for connected standby devices, but the memory is soldered to the board, so you can't pull that out and do anything. So it's a much more secure environment. So it makes it so that those types of devices don't need to have a preboot at all. But if you do need it, because you probably still have older machines, then what happens is after that grace period expires, the MBAM wizard is going to come up like it does today, except it's going to be in that enforcement page, which is your topmost window, and you can't close it, and you know we're asking you for your PIN or password, because we have to get that from the user. So unfortunately, we can't do it automatically for them, because they wouldn't know what the password was when they rebooted. So let's look at what this looks like. Well, bounce back to snapshots, I gotta purge my Kerberos cache here. All right. So let me jump to the group policies first before I jump into that. So the group policies are mostly the same between previous versions of MBAM. So I'm going to just talk about what's new. So I've already gone through and configured this policy. So again, if you want the new 2.5 ADMX templates, you need to go out to microsoft.com/downloads, search for m.ADMX templates, and they'll be in there. So we're going to expand out to the m.mban node. And under client management, you're going to see normal stuff that you've seen in the past. So I'm going to configure my MBAM services. Now note what I did here. Since I have a load balancer now, I pointed this at my virtual network name of my load balanced web farm. So that's, you want to make sure you do that if you're implementing load balancing. So pretty straightforward there. The other thing that I wanted to call out here is that there's a security policy link. And so a lot of customers really wanted to be able to talk to their users and be able to share a message about, you know, hey, here's our encryption standards and here's why we're prompting you and if you need more information. So since everyone had something different that they wanted to write, we decided to make it this a URL. So you can point it at your internal intranet site and so they can click on that link and get more information, but it's specific to your organization. So you have complete control over that. Here I've just put Microsoft.com just as an example, but you would put like your intranet site there to get information. So that's kind of something that we added to the client wizard so you can talk to your users. As far as the enforced policy piece, if I go down to operating system drive, for example, you can see a couple things here. So enhanced pins actually means enhanced pins now. So if I want to enable this, that means that you know I can use the Unicode set, or as you can see here, I could click this and say, you know, it has to be ASCII only pins. But that gives you a lot more flexibility in the type of characters that you can use in pre-boot. And here is where you get to the enforced policy piece. So we've got this lengthy description here, which is fun to read through. But here's where I would set the grace period. So I could say 0 days, which again means that for all my TPM-only machines, the minute I detect that they're not compliant, I'm going to prompt the user, or excuse me, I'm going to encrypt in the background automatically without prompting the user at all. So they can become compliant without even knowing anything's happening. For the TPM plus PIN, or if I have a password protector, which is generally for non-TPM machines on Windows 8, then it will just come to the topmost at the front, and we'll go and prompt them to enter their information. So we'll leave this at, we'll put 5 days, but I'm going to circumvent the process to make the demo faster. And again, I can do this for fixed drives as well, so it's got an option there as well. So you can have different policies for each if you want. You could set them to be exactly the same. And that's pretty much all that I needed to set up to get MBAM running. So let's jump over to the client and see what that looks like. So I'm going to simulate that I have a 20-day grace period. And this is just an export of the group policy keys. There's nothing really special here. All right, so my drive's not compliant here. And you can see that I can delay until 6-8. And then here is also this company security policy link where they can find out more about your particular companies. And that's based on the URL that I set in the group policy object. So if I clicked on that, it would open Microsoft.com in my case, or in your case, it would open whatever was appropriate. So that kind of helps your users to really know what's going on and why they're seeing this dialogue. So you can see since I have a grace period that hasn't expired yet, I can still click postpone. Now, in the group policies, I could also go back and say, I want to have a user exemption policy so they can, you know, users can say, I want to be exempt, and you can go through your approval process. So that would show up here as well. I just haven't configured that, but you could do the same thing. And that's one of the points of the grace period, too, is that you, if you want to provide that interface to your end user so they can request exemption for whatever reason, then that will show up here as well. So I'm just going to postpone for now, and then we're going to pretend that our grace period's passed. So I've just ignored it. I've been clicking postpone for 20 days. And now my grace period's over. So here what you can see is that it becomes my topmost window. I can't close it. I can't go here and close it, right? Any of this stuff is blocked, and I'm required to put a password. Now, I have a password on this one because it's a VM, and there's no TPM on this machine. So since it's Windows 8, I can use the password protector, which is kind of the same as a PIN, but different, but it's still pre-boot. So that's kind of what the experience looks like there, is that their grace period's expired, now they need to encrypt it. So that's the new enforcement. All right. So kind of in summary here, I want to talk through all the new features that we've added. So we have a completely new server setup experience. This was kind of, we spent a lot of time trying to make this experience better for you. We heard a lot of feedback about how you wanted to be able to, have these highly available environments. You wanted disaster recovery. You wanted the experience itself to just be better to deploy this thing and make it easier. And so we've gone through and done that. You saw we added PowerShell support. We completely redid the server UI, so it's a lot more streamlined. And a lot easier for you to figure out how things work and how it fits together so you can be successful the first time instead of having to have issues as you go through it. We added multi-forest support. So now if you had multiple forests, as long as your trusts are right, which means that your server has to trust your client at least or have two-way trust set up, then you only need one environment. You don't have to have two or three or four or five MBAM environments. We had the enforced policy piece that we did where, as you just saw, you know, you can set a grace period or you can say, hey, I want to encrypt immediately. And that's a great experience to help you get compliant as quickly as possible in your organization. PIN complexity, we mentioned that you can't, you know, by default, we're going to prevent your end users from entering simple PINs. So you can't have 1234 or 1111 or any of those sorts of things. And we also support enhanced PINs now, which are, you know, the same as what BitLocker supports, where you can have symbols, you can have any Unicode character, or you can limit that to ASCII characters. We have FIPS support, as we talked about. So we talked about how in 8.1, there's the new, if you're in government or work with government and have these FIPS requirements, that, you know, the recovery experience is now awesome in 8.1, so it's a lot better. It's just the same as whether you didn't have FIPS. We don't care. You can still go to the help desk. We'll escrow your keys for you. You can go to the self-service portal and do your own recovery. So it's a great experience on Windows 8.1. We made a lot of performance improvements. So you saw that the environment, like to set up support 500,000 machines, was very minimal as far as the hardware that's required for that. So that's really great. And then we gave the real-time reports as well. So the enterprise compliance report is no longer a 12-hour delayed report. And then the last thing was localization. So you get localization, SIM shipped with the product. So when is this all available? It's available now. It actually is available 2 weeks ago. So some of you, who's installed it? Anybody? One. Okay. Well, the rest of you are now all sold on it, so I'm expecting you guys to all go out there and get this installed. As you can see, we set up a really complex environment on the server side in about 25 minutes, right? So it's granted that's not installing SQL and a couple of the prereqs you'll need to do, so be a little bit of time on that, but it's not that bad, right? It was a lot easier than it's been in the past. So it's available now. Please go out there and download it. It's either going to be on your volume license site or it's on the MSDN site. So it's under MDOP 2014, I believe. So we're excited to have you guys go out there and try it. All right. Well, I promised I'd save some time for Q&A, and I did. So we have 10 minutes left. So if you have a question, please go to one of the mics. There's three in the back, three up front. So please ask your question there. No questions. All right. Well, I'll be up here for 10 more minutes at least, so if you want to come up and ask some questions, that's great. There's a bunch of related content here you can get as well, a lot of MDOP and so forth that you can take a look at as well. And appreciate everyone coming. Thank you.